You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to GameSense.AB.ca. Tyler Yaremchuk joins us. Ty, welcome back to the show, man. How you doing?
I am doing good. Excited for a good game tonight against a pretty fun team out in Montreal.
Oh, they are entertaining, no question. Like, my God, if you can't... Now, I know it's the Flames couldn't score, but the Flames had a lot of chance. Flames had 37 shots last night in that game. So and that was really the first game that I think Montreal gave up a lot of chances anyway. So, you know, the order is Connor McDavid, who I asked him about, and he even said, like, good question, man. Like, I don't know. It seems like we're off. That was his exact words. Like, it just seems like it's off. They switched up two lines. Podkolzin will go play with Frederick on the third line in Philp, and Matt Savoy gets the bump up tonight on the top line. What do you make of those two changes?
I really like the Savoy look. I think he's been really, really noticeable. Even if it's not popping up on the score sheet a whole heck of a lot, he's had some chances where goalies have made really good saves. And he gets more than a passing grade for the way he's started the season in my eyes. And I think, you know, a lot of people came into the year and the expectations for Savoy and Howard got a little out of hand at some points, I think. But even a guy like Savoy, with what I've seen so far early in the season, I think he can absolutely score 20 goals at the NHL level. And I think sometimes, you know, fans hear 20 goal score and it's like, oh yeah, he scores one goal every four games. But like, that's just not how it works. You're going to have a hot streak. And I think Matt Savoy is more than skilled enough to have a hot streak where, you know, maybe he pops home six in a 10 game stretch. And then he goes cold for a little bit and he fights some puck luck. And then he scores three in three games or something like that. So again, I've been impressed with him. I think he's earned this promotion. And I think one issue that's maybe been a thing with that player next to Connor and Leon, like Andrew Mangiapane has an unbelievable wrist shot. He didn't use it once when he played with Connor and Leon. And I think sometimes guys get put up there, especially if they've never been in that spot before, and they move away from their game and what makes them successful. They almost get like a little bit too obsessed with just trying to find the puck to get the puck to Connor and Leon. And I remember I had Tyler Ennis on my show, and I bring this up a lot, but I had him on my show like last year around this time. And he talked about how when he got acquired at the deadline, it took him a handful of games of playing with Leon Draisaitl to finally get over like, oh yeah, I can play my game and it'll work as a compliment to him. He had to get over the hump of like, you know, they're so good, they're so talented that you just think you've got to find a way to get them the puck to be successful. So for Savoy tonight, you know, try to not do what a Mangiapane did and truly play your game, and I think you'll have success.
Yeah, well, I asked him directly about that, and he just said, you know what, the minute you overthink it and try to do what's different, well, then you probably won't find yourself in the top line very often. So I think the coach moved him up there because he's playing really fast and he's been generating some chances. And so eventually you give McDavid and Draisaitl enough chances, eventually they're going to score. That's just simple truth.
Yeah, and the other thing he's doing well is he's drawing a couple of penalties. And, like, again, you draw penalties if you have the puck on your stick and you're not just in a panic to go get rid of it. Like, when you're holding on to the puck and you're making plays, that's how you're going to draw penalties. So that's another thing, again, I want to see Savoy today. Like, hang on to the puck a little bit. Work the puck off the cycle. Don't just be in a rush to dish it off. And, yeah, just kind of play his game. Like you said, if he goes in there and is just the Matt Savoy that we've seen for six games, then I think the coaching staff will recognize that, and this won't be a short look up on the top line.
The Oilers offense obviously isn't where it needs to be, but defensively as a team and goaltending for sure, that's been the bright spot. And like if you would look and say, man, look at the Oilers goals against average, as I mentioned, you remove empty net goals because that has nothing to do with the goalies. Goals across the NHL, the Oilers with a goalie in net have the fifth lowest goals against average in the league.
Yeah, and they're not giving up a ton of looks. Like, I even go back to that first game of the year against Calgary, and Calgary ends up scoring three goals, and then they get a fourth because of the shootout one. But those three goals that Calgary scored, were they amazing looks that Calgary picked the Oilers' system apart? No, it was just, like, dumb luck and dumb decisions by the Oilers, and the puck ended up in the back of their net. And they've cleaned that up for the most part since then. They've gotten good goaltending. Think of that Skinner game out in Madison Square Garden. So they're defending well, and it's also come without Jake Walman in the lineup for most of it. And I kind of, again, view him and Darnell Nurse as like a bit of a swing pairing where, like, if Walman can get the best out of Nurse and both those guys are playing at what you'd consider a strong level for their standards, then the Oilers have a really, really good second pairing. And if those two are sputtering, then you'll probably see some struggles from the blue line. But having Wallman back is kind of my point here. It should be massive to have him back and contributing at a regular basis, because this blue line, like, they acquired Wallman last year at the deadline or right ahead of the deadline. And then there was a bunch of injuries, and then Ekholm was gone. Like, we really haven't seen this Oilers blue line truly at full 100% health since they acquired Wallman.
Yeah, that's fair. And that'll be a good thing for the team. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, Wallman comes in, they kind of ease him in his first game. You know, not only is he offensive, he blocks shots very well, has good timing on that. He can be physical. I think he's a little bit of a kind of a chirper on the ice, which I think is good, because the Oilers through seven games, like, you know, there was joke, Sean Brown said, he didn't even need linesmen in their games because there's been no scrums. Like, they haven't, you know, there hasn't been much going on other than when Regula got rocked by Kane. There hasn't really been much of a scrum. And I firmly believe the Oilers, you don't have to have fighters to play with emotion, and I'd like to see a bit more emotion in their game.
And I remember you and I had this conversation at some point during training camp, and I was like, man, maybe just having some like youthful energy in the room with Howard and Savoy can kind of loosen everybody up a little bit. And we talk about how, like, sometimes it feels like no one likes scoring goals less than the Oilers. They put it in the back of the net. They've done it so many times because all these guys have been around, and then it's like, all right, back to the bench. And like, you see a guy like Jake Wallman. I know it was an OT winner, so it's easier to get fired up for that, but he scores. He's got the fun little head bobbing celebration. If you look in the background of that video, Matt Savoy starts bursting out laughing. Like, I think Wallman also, even though he's, you know, closer to 30 than he is 25, I think he also brings a little bit of that like light energy to the game, which is, again, I think they need more of that.
Oh God, no question about. Are you surprised that Pickard's going to start two of the next three games?
Really surprised. I felt like coming back on home ice, this was a very easy spot to go back to Stuart Skinner, where he's playing well. It's an easy sell to Calvin Pickard, where you just go, hey, doubleheader coming, so we're rolling with Stu in this one. The only thing that I can maybe think of, and we had this debate, Liam and I did on my show today, there are some bad playoff moments in that building in Vancouver where they play Sunday night for Stuart Skinner. I know he had the really good game in Game 7, but like, I remember earlier in that series when that crowd was on him and they had to, you know, go to Pickard. I wonder if maybe they're protecting Skinner from having to go and have a start. But like, that's the old, like, again, that's the reach I'm taking to try understand why they're going this path of giving Pickard two or three. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
No, I don't think it does. And, you know, if they play good defense, ultimately it might not matter, but I'm a little surprised. Yeah. You know, especially if you just look at the numbers between the two of them, right? So, you know, at the end of that, that means in the first 10 games, Skinner's going to play six and Pickard's going to play four. So we'll see how it goes. Like, you could have went Skinner tonight, and then if you didn't want him to play in Vancouver, just play Skinner in Seattle, and then you would have played Pickard in Vancouver if you wanted to. Now, I know, you know, that's four starts in a row, and they don't really like doing that, so I can understand it. So maybe, I think it might be more about they didn't want four consecutive starts. That's the thing I can see. It's the only rational thing I can think of, but I don't think you can be scared of the Vancouver Canucks. Like, if I'm like, hey, I'm liking how my starter's playing, great. He'll play Montreal, we'll play Pickard in Seattle, and we'll put Skinner in Vancouver, and away we roll, because we want to beat them again. That's kind of how I would look at it, especially because, you know, that'll be Pickard going twice against Vancouver in your first 10 games, right? So that to me is a little surprising too. Now, unless, you know, their plan is that Pickard's going to play Seattle and then Skinner's going to play on Sunday, so who knows? We'll see. Looking at the other big story of the week, of course, I know you flew in to the Jays playoff game. You're a huge Jays fan. What was the outside up until the home run? What was the best part of the game?
Oh man. I mean, it was dead in there there was energy early on, obviously, and it was good. But then kind of the fifth inning and the sixth inning and then even the top of the seventh, everyone was kind of like looking around, and I get a little doom and gloomy because I love the Jays. And I'm like, oh my God, like, we're going to watch Seattle celebrate tonight on the field. And it was tough. And I'll say the moment, it wasn't the Barger walk or even the hit from IKF that just bled up the middle. When I looked down on the field and saw Andre Jimenez hyping up the crowd and throwing up his arms after he laid down a sacrifice bunt, that gave like almost everybody some juice. It's like, that just shows you, again, playoff baseball, totally different. Jimenez laid down a good sack bunt and was so fired up about it. And that's when things kind of really picked up for the crowd. And like, again, the crazy thing about baseball is you sit there, you're down in the dumps for three innings. boom, swing of the bat. And all of a sudden you go from being totally dejected to, I was at the game with Carter Hutt and I turned to Hutz and I'm like, they're six outs away from finishing this off. Like that home run being as late as it was, everything that went into it, it was unbelievable. Watching that ball fly out in person was just, I'll never forget it. It was so cool.
What do you make of their chances against the Dodgers?
Yeah, I think even the biggest Blue Jays optimist will tell you it's not great. I mean, the Dodgers, they have a lot of left-handed bats. The Jays don't have a lot of great left-handed arms to kind of counteract that, although I do think we'll see a lot more of Chris Bassitt in this series coming out of the bullpen to try counteract that a little bit. But I don't know. It's not great. That Dodgers team, like, again, the Mariners, 7, 8, 9 hitters, those were like visible weak spots in their lineup. One through six, they were great. The issue now is going to be the Dodgers are good 1 through 9. They have enough good platoon guys on their bench that they can construct their lineup to offset any pitcher you throw out there. It's a tall task. I don't give them a great chance, but I mean, what's kind of cool about this, what this presents for the Jays is like winning a World Series at any point is amazing. And I would love to see one of my teams win a championship. I've never seen it in my life, but if they do it against the Dodgers, it's not just a World Series win. It's one of the all-time greatest upsets, I think, in World Series history.
Yeah, like the Jays are good, right? Like I was watching reading at MLB.com. Mike Ferrelli wrote an article, and he outlined how the Jays are like they're the best hitting team in baseball this year. They don't strike out very much, and you know, like even in the playoffs, they got like 100 higher points than the Dodgers. Never mind everybody else, right? Like it's not just like they get singles and they hit for power when you have to. They like that Jimenez bunt when both of the first and third basemen were in, and he still put in the perfect spot to sacrifice the guys over. Like they can play small ball. They're better defensively than the Dodgers. There's no question about that. And so now it comes down to pitching, and I know pitching plays a huge role, but the Jays, to me, if they can get to the Dodgers bullpen, or because the Brewers never could, and that's really what cost them. They could never get to the bullpen. And the Dodgers bullpen has some weaknesses here. So I think it's the Jays have done a great job of scoring runs late in games, Ty, as obviously we saw it with Springer. They got to get some runs early in this series. And the one thing they do is they've been pretty good at extending at bats. Even if they don't get a hit, they're taking 8, 9 pitches in a bat. They can do that against their starters. Well, then they'll get them out earlier, and then they got a shot.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say is especially early on in their lineup, and Bo Bichette being back is great because he's one of those guys who is better at extending at bats than basically anyone else in baseball. When he gets to 2 strikes, that front foot stays basically firmly planted on the ground, and he will foul off 7, 8 pitches in a row. But if you're going to have Springer, Lucas, I mean, Vladdy's okay at it, but not great. But then Bichette, if 3 of those 4 guys are batting in the first 4 spots in your order, which I believe they will be come tomorrow, then yeah, you have a chance to, even if you don't get a hit in the first inning, that pitcher might have to throw 23 pitches to get out of it.
Yeah, for sure. It should be fun. Looking forward to that. And do the Oilers and Habs combine for more than 6 goals tonight?
Yeah, I think so. I was listening a little bit when you were talking with Speck about how the Oilers haven't gotten to that magical 4-goal number yet. And, you know, Sam Montembeau's been struggling a little bit so far this season. His numbers aren't great. So, yeah, I think the Oilers will find a way to get the offense going. My only concern will kind of be that the Habs offense is also going to be strong, and maybe they bounce back from last night where they were only able to get 2, I believe, past Dustin Wolf. So I think we're going over tonight. It's one of my favorite plays on Play Alberta.
All right. Ty, thanks for this, buddy. Have a good one.
Yeah, no problem.